come my way, my truth, my life, such a way as gives us breath, such a truth as ends all strife, such a life as killeth death. So wrote the mystic George Herbert. In the town of Terre Haute, Indiana, in 2010, the city council erected a statue in downtown. It was of a man full-sized, sitting on a bench, with a pen in one hand and paper in the other. And on the paper was written his most famous poem, called Desiderata. It means desired things. Seems to me I saw Desiderata printed as a long form on the back of many a college dorm door back in the 1970s. It seemed to be what students were reading at the time. You may be familiar with it. Go gladly amid the noise and haste, wrote Max Ehrman, its author, and remember what peace there may be in silence. As far as possible, without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and listen to others. Even the dull and the ignorant, they too have their story. Be yourself especially, but do not feign affection. Neither be cynical about love. For in all the faces of its aridity and disenchantment, love is as perennial as grass. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here, and whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive God to be, and whatever your labors and aspirations in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace with your soul. The people of Terre Haute felt that was worth a statue, and they put it up. Now, on the other side of the country right now, there is no statue being placed for this young man. He's an acquaintance of mine who is in ministry in his middle years, and the door is opening for him on a new work. He will be called senior pastor and head of staff in a large Presbyterian church in the southern United States. I shudder to think about the responsibility of it. I looked on the website of the church. It's a formidable-looking building. And on the website, there was a summary of the search committee, the committee that went looking for their minister. They wrote in great detail about the labor they put in and the prayerfulness of their search and the happiness they had about choosing this candidate. And then from my friend, there was a note of acceptance. He is thrilled and honored to go there and to open up the Word of God in the company of such a fine group and to bring his family and his young children and so on. And I can imagine his young family packing up the place where he has been part of a multi-staff and going to a brand new city and a brand new experience. And I realize that that church on the website is a church with a history all its own. It has its social and cultural parameters, as all churches do. And the question is, will my young friend and those parameters fit together in a creative way? It has its wounds and its prizes. Within the congregation are its saints, for sure, and its curmudgeons. He will run into them now and then. He brings with him a vision and a reticence of his own. He has known both the joys and the wounds of pastoral ministry so far, and he realizes it's a new day. It's a new day for the pastor and a new day for the congregation. No statue yet. Just the beginning of new work. Yet at the heart of the church, we live to adore God and to be at the service of God. All congregations, in their best moment, live to adore God and to be at the service of God. Without that, our calling as an organization, as a group, goes mute and our place in the world is lost. So no matter where we are in this, be it a new ministry in a new era, or in a familiar ministry with folk you know going into a brand new year, we are still seeking to meet God at some level. Well, I thought, how does the creature meet the Creator? It seems like an impossible task, doesn't it? How does the potter have any comment to make how does the pot have any comment to make about the potter? And how does the wave address the wind that blows it wherever it will? And how does the lover address the heart of love once you've fallen into its cauldron and hardly know where you are? And then I think to myself, who am I to ask the question, how do we meet God? I'm a limited person of a certain age and experience. I can't begin to know how the world operates in all its fullness. We build on what we know and on what we trust, but the road ahead is always unknown and it's wide open. So how do we meet God? When I read the section from the book of Exodus this time, it gave me at least a bit of a framework for such a meeting. See what you think. It says that we are a community. I think that's important to know. We're not just individuals who come here with our own needs, although we do that. We are also a community, groups of friends and associates. We're sitting beside real people who have real lives in the same city. We're not individuals who have dug out private nuggets of gold from our own secret gold mines and are here to show them to God. There is something about us all being here together that makes a difference. And the story says that the community moves by stages along the way. And I thought we too have known stages in life. We've all known infancy, and we've all known childhood, and we've all known the school years. Oh, please don't mention the school years to me. And we've all known family life, for good or ill, and we've all known crises and arrivals and departures and joys and tragedies and highs and lows. And if we ever sat down over a meal and talked to each other about them, we would learn we have much more in common with each other than we may have imagined. We're all familiar with the cost of moving in stages. We're also possessing at the urge of some deeper thing. Do you feel in your soul that something is pushing you in your life to be something fuller, to learn something more deeply, to go from here to there, not to stay as you are, but to work on your stuff and deepen your experience? I do. It's a haunting sort of thing. The hound of heaven, you can hear it baying in the distance as it moves you along. Something is pushing and pulling. Why bother with it, we say? Why not just live your life? But at some point, a little voice says to us, we can't help but bother with it because it is primal and it pushes us forward. We're also together here for a purpose, to interpret Christ for this age. That is the purpose of any church congregation in any time, to discern how people think and feel, to experience the kinds of thrusts and the kinds of issues with which we are surrounded, and then to interpret Christ, that gem, somehow to that new age. It's a profound task, and we are to retool ourselves for the essentials, to make sure that in our brief moment of opportunity, we do it as well as we can. And we are to awaken the passion that is in us. It's not just 10 ideas about God that you stick on the refrigerator door. Something sets our hearts on fire, and we know that life is here and life is to be shared. And we are to model moral and ethical strength in a time of apparent drift. This is the nature of a human life and its interaction with others, we say. We press against greed and cruelty and intolerance and evil because they rise and rise and rise and rise again. Now, the text suggests that sometimes stopping places are more suitable for us than others. Sometimes we get into places that are rich and others into places that are uncomfortable. Some places we may end up may lack clarity for a while. I don't know what that era was like, but I didn't like the people, and I didn't like the issues, and I didn't like the way we handled them, we say. Sometimes we enter periods in which we lack support. Nobody seems to care what our values are or how we go about our business. Roadblocks seem to appear in front of us every time we move. In other places, we feel far too exposed. We're afraid half the time and can't get any work done. And then sometimes there are places in which we are way too well hidden and we can become self-satisfied with our little message as it bangs around the walls and makes us feel good again. No one place, be it suitable or terrifying, can be our final destination, however. We are heading for promised land, whatever that is, promised land, some unfading dream which will not let us go. It belongs to all of us, and we are models, and we are seekers for promised land. So how do we meet God together, is the question. Well, it struck me that we need to name our basic need. What is our basic need in the midst of life, do you think? It was water, according to the Old Testament story. At some point, you take 100,000 people somewhere to a dry spot, and there's no water. The basic need is water. So what is it that you need as a person? If you are to look at the wide world and your own experience, what is the one thing that's a basic need? And I was thinking of my own, and a few words drifted through me, but I think what floated to the top for me was belonging. At some point, I need to belong. Whatever that looks like, it's a basic need. I need to belong. I unravel fairly quickly if I don't belong. And then I thought, what do we need as a group? And I wouldn't presume to answer for us all, but my perception is that we need a sense of welcome. Wherever we go, just a sense of welcome. The door opens and someone says, "You are welcome here. I don't know you well yet, but you're simply welcome. So relax, let your guard down a little bit, and let's see where this thing goes." We are somehow to brave the disconnection of newness as well, and the heckling of naysayers. There's always going to be people around who don't like what we're doing, who think the things we believe and care about are unimportant and that we've missed the boat somewhere. We are to hold each other accountable when we're afraid in order to put up a defense and an offense that allows Jesus Christ and the living God to come through. And we're to enjoy the pace and the varieties of our bonding. Every time we meet each other as a congregation, Sunday by Sunday, it's a new experience. One writer has said to the preacher, "You're never in the same pulpit twice," because everyone in the congregation's life has moved by 7 days between the last time you spoke and this time. And the world has shifted, and the headlines have changed, and feelings have moved and shifted as well. So every Sunday is a brand new experience, a new variety of bonding. Welcome it if we are to meet God. And recover the most powerful vehicle of your tradition and put that vehicle up front. In the Old Testament story, Moses took the staff, the stick, which had been the sign of his authority. With that, he had wowed the wizards of Egypt into listening. With that, he had opened the Red Sea so that the people could cross. And now, with that, he walks to a solid rock in the face of need and dares to touch the rock. And from the rock, water flows. Take that symbol of your strength and hold it in front of you. As a group of 200 anniversary planners, we sat here last week around a table and began to say, how are we going to advertise the fact of our 200th anniversary as a congregation, which comes up next year? What symbol shall we use on the front of all our bulletin covers and in our public face? And we talked about this and that and one option and another. And then somebody said, the tower, the church tower. That's the first thing you see. And now that it's all been cleaned, it's shining in gold. It's the oldest part of the building. It survived the fire. It contains the bells of welcome, which draw people across the park. It is our symbol. And other churches and our friends in the neighborhood have their towers firmly displayed. Let's put the Metropolitan Tower on the face of our advertising so right away people will see our symbol and know who we are. And so, I believe, we shall. Take leadership and risk a faithful gesture. What does it mean for you to take the stick and touch the rock in front of you on an issue to see if the water will flow? That's a mystery, to be sure. At what point does your courage, your understanding, need to come into play in order to meet God? Well, shifting over to the Philippians passage, I read there of the quality of life necessary within a congregation's life in order, perhaps, to meet God. It's all about valuing common ground. We sit among friends, and our relationship with those friends warms the temperature of the space and allows the spirit to flow. I was sitting in here the other evening at about 6 o'clock, waiting for a wedding party to arrive. The place was silent, but never empty, and all the lights were on, and I sat at the chair behind the communion table, and suddenly I found myself speaking to the ghosts and wizards, remembering the names and faces of all those people who I've known over 3 decades. Today marks the first day of my 30th year of ministry with this congregation, and I saw all their smiling faces. Back in the late 1930s, when Dr. Peter Bryce was the minister here, he took a young soldier under his wing who'd walked through the door for the first time and made him welcome. A few weeks later, the soldier came back and Dr. Bryce called him by name. And the soldier said, "How in the world did you remember my name?" "I just did," said Dr. Bryce. Well, Dr. Bryce lined the soldier up with a very bright young woman in the congregation and said to him, "That's the girl for you." Well, they got together and they got engaged and Dr. Bryce married them. And then the two of them went off to the King Edward Hotel to spend a weekend for their honeymoon. And when they got there, they went to the desk and the man said, "I'm sorry, your suite is not available." And their faces fell. And then he said, "We'll have to put you into the bridal suite for the weekend." So they went to the bridal suite and they had the most remarkable time. And it was years and years later that they learned that Dr. Bryce had gone down, canceled the arrangement, and purchased out of his own pocket the bridal suite for the young couple. She raved about him over the years. She was our longest standing member, and she died just this past year in her late 90s in all her dignity and delight. And this week, through the mail, we received a check from her estate for $50,000, $25,000 to the music program where her disabled son, Jimmy, had sung in the choir for years, and $25,000 to the Metropolitan Silver Band, which has made people so happy. We are full of presence in this place, people sitting alive among us, our friends, neighbors, and family, and those who love us beyond the doors of death are still present with us. The quality of our life together in memory and in richness allows us more readily to meet God. Dr. George Morrison and his wife, Bindi, who used to be here, George Morrison was one of our students, went on to become the General Secretary of the United Church of Canada, came back one year from his place on the islands off the coast of British Columbia, first time in years coming back to Metropolitan. They came back in their age for a Sunday morning service, and I met them in the pew, and I said, "Well, welcome home." He said, "This place is absolutely magic. As soon as we put our feet onto the grass of the park, we could feel the pulse and energy of this church throbbing through our bodies." Have you felt that way? There's no place like this place. To meet God is to enjoy and savor and empower the quality of the relationship. To greet each new twist and turn of our common life with an intention to love, because our love is stronger than our fear. And to pitch the common expectation, be brave enough to see the vision before us. St. Paul writes, "You will shine in the world like bright stars because you are offering it the word of life." Does the calling come any higher than that? Now, that little hostile incident in Matthew's gospel is a bit of a downer. It does contrast attitudes with finding God. Those who come to Jesus asking him by what authority he speaks are coming with shields up. They really don't want to know the answer. The message is, "Get out. We don't want to hear about you." And it's like the son who says, "Well, of course I will serve you," and then doesn't go to the vineyard. But what about the son who says, "I'm not going to go," and then goes? "Who did the will of the Father?" says Jesus. "The one who said he wouldn't go and then went." There's a turning necessary to meet God. It takes work to move from "I won't go" to finding a way to go and seeing the value in it. Last night was a very busy night in Toronto, and I'd gone to Hamilton to conduct a wedding. It took me an hour and a half to get back to the city. The traffic was crawling all along the Queen Elizabeth Way. We got home, I was there 20 minutes, and we headed downtown to University Avenue for somebody's birthday party. We jumped in a cab, went 6 blocks, and hit roadblocks for Nuit Blanche. It took 45 minutes to crawl along Bloor Street and down Bay Street to our destination, and later in the evening it took 20 minutes to get a taxi cab, and then we crawled through the city and went way far east to go all the way up to our place, and it cost $50 worth of taxi fare, and I was grumbling away to myself like an old curmudgeon, this is closing up the Invictus Games, Toronto Argonauts, mumble. I was doing that. And there were tens of thousands of young people under 30 on the streets with their cameras out and smiling and laughing and walking together and enjoying the sights and sounds of Nuit Blanche. The streets were packed as I've never seen them before. And the taxi crawled and I watched the meter climbing and climbing and I was mumbling to myself. And my wife said, "What's the matter with you?" I said, "I'm not having a good time." She said, "Do you not realize that in parts of the world where neo-Nazis are fighting against those who oppose them and refugee children are being thrown into the flames, here are hundreds of thousands of our own city people, young people under 30, with curiosity in their eyes, kindness and friendship on their lips, walking together in a dark city and bringing life to it. Can you not see the value of that kind of thing?" And I, who had said no, was able to say yes. And I turned and went to the vineyard. If you're going to meet the God, sometimes you have to put the shield down and simply say yes. We meet Christ at the table today, worldwide communion, and across North America and other places, people will gather to receive the bread and the wine, to become one flesh together with our Lord and in memory of all those who sit with us in silence. And we will meet God today, and it will change us as well. For this is the hour of banquet and of song. This is the heavenly table spread for us. Here, let us feast, and feasting still prolong deep, engaging life of fellowship and trust. May Christ draw near us at this feast. May God be adored by us in this meeting.